Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
It's Barbecue Nation with JT on a Northwest Lifestyle Weekend. Now here's JT on FM News 101.
Well, it's Saturday afternoon, and what are you doing out there? Your honey do's, your honey don'ts, your honey, I don't know, I'm getting in the car and going to the bar. Hey, everybody, welcome to Barbecue Nation here on KXL and the Radio Northwest Network. I'm JT, along with master producer there, David Shurtleff. You know, today on The Nation, who knows the do's and don'ts around the grill and the kitchen better than my friend Ron Mead? Ron is a former restaurateur. He's a barbecue judge, he's an author, and he was a troubleshooter for United Airlines and the Oakland Raiders back in the day. We'll get into that a bit later. And today's musical guests, of course, are Ann and Nancy Wilson from Heart. I still have a crush on Nancy Wilson, or Ann Wilson. She got married again. But anyway, let's get going. Ron, welcome to the show.
Thanks, JT.
So tell us a little bit about your history with food. Now, you started cooking like I did when you were a kid. You went through the parents dropped you off, pinned a 20 on your vest at Oregon State and years ago and said, best of luck to you. And that started your restaurant and food career, basically, in a roundabout way.
Well, I actually had a real job for a short period of time. I went to work for United Airlines, and as you referenced, I worked in the sales department, and my accounts were professional sports teams. And I had all the East Bay teams, the Oakland Raiders, the Oakland Seals, Oakland Oaks, and my job was to solicit sales, and then I also got to travel with them. So I was a 22-year-old bucko in the fast lane with Joe Namath and John Madden and Daryl LaMonica and Kenny Stabler, and that was a great job. Then shortly after that, I did that for about 5 years, and I quickly figured out that the corporate environment was probably not my cup of tea. I was a little bit too radical for that. So I started cooking. Actually, I went up to Squaw Valley to go skiing for a year, and I found out that I needed something to do while I was there. And so I started flipping hamburgers at 6,500 feet and have cooked pretty much ever since that.
Ever since then, yeah. So real quickly, how was it hanging around with Stabler? I mean, he just passed away, but with Stabler, Matuszak, and those guys, you know, Big Ben, it had to be fun.
Yeah, I just carried a broom and a dustpan.
Yeah.
We don't need to go there too much.
Okay, I got it.
It was fast, though.
Yeah, it was. And I do remember one story, and we'll get to the food, I promise, folks. But I do remember one story. You're talking about trying to get out of the hotel with Reggie Jackson.
Right. Actually, we were in New York with the Athletics, and we played the Yankees in the afternoon, and I just happened to be walking down the tunnel to go out to the team bus with Reggie. And when you get outside, the buses are, you know, parked out of the curb. And between us and the curb was about 250 people, most of which were kids. And, of course, everybody's got a Sharpie and a pad, and they want an autograph. And I kept trying to convince them that I wasn't a player. I'm not a player. I can't give you an autograph. And finally, Reggie turned to me and said, Ron, will you sign the damn autograph so we can get to the bus? So I started signing, best wishes, Ron Mead. Best wishes, Ron Mead. And finally, we got on the bus. And now there's about 50, 60 people in New York that got all these autographs. Whatever happened to that guy? He didn't do too well.
Yeah, they might be on eBay.
Yeah, could be.
They might be on eBay. So your progression in food, though, I know you went to through food sciences at Oregon State, among other things, but one of the highlights of your career was also you were the proud owner of the Candlelight Room,
right,
when it existed in downtown Portland. And did that teach you more about, owning a bar always teaches you a lot about human beings and stuff, but did that teach you more about food service and food prep than probably anything? I mean, as far as quick, fast, what people eat, what they won't eat?
Well, interestingly, when I think the major lesson that I learned, and I try to pass this on to people getting into the restaurant business, is you're better off if you know more about business than you do about cooking. There's lots of good cooks out there, but the majority of people who buy a restaurant get into it emotionally. And once you get into it, you find you've got 1,000 moving parts that you need to manage all at one time, unless you get big. If you get big and you can hire managers and you have someone taking care of payroll and someone taking care of HR and all the other things that go into making up a restaurant, well, then you can delegate. But really, the business of running a restaurant is really the thing that I learned the most, and the thing that I find that most people don't understand. There's lots of people that can bake great apple pies, but that is not really the key to the success.
Right.
You need to have a good product. I'm not downgrading that, but really the business aspect of running a multi-moving unit at one time is really the thing that I learned the most. But I had a great time at the Candlelight. We owned that for about 9 years. Had lots of good times there. That was back in the heydays of late 70s and mid 80s, and it was a well-known place amongst a lot of people, and we had a great time there.
A lot of Ruppelmints.
A lot of Ruppelmints, yes.
Yeah. There's a story about that, but we won't go there. And then later on, you've progressed, and you and I have known each other for well over 30 years. So you became a barbecue judge.
Right.
One time. And tell us about that process as far as through your eyes.
Well, I had always messed around with barbecue. I can remember I was at a restaurant show one time, I would say probably about 1980, and I don't think there were any barbecue places in Portland at the time. There were maybe a couple, and I saw a system that you could put into your kitchen, a kind of a pressure barbecue system, and so I bought that. I think it was like $4,000 or $5,000 at the time, which was a lot of money, and I messed around with that, and I was just intrigued by barbecue. I'm not quite sure why. So after I got out of the restaurant business, I thought, I wonder if there really is an avenue for, and that this would have been the mid 80s, I wonder if there's an avenue for barbecue. And so we messed around. As a matter of fact, I think you and I went to a couple horse shows with a wagon, and we had great products. The challenge we had back then was there was a lot of price resistance.
Right.
As you know, there's a lot of shrinkage when you do barbecue, and so consequently, you need to charge a fair price if you're going to make a living at it. And back then, people weren't quite willing to pay $8 for a sandwich when you could get one for $3. So
right.
We
right.
had a difficult time, but I was really intrigued by that. And then I got an invitation. Somebody I'd known when I was working with the Restaurant Association called me and said, "Well, why don't you go to this school? You can become a judge." So I went over, and It's not very tough. You know, you pay your fee, and they go through the process and show you how it works. And so we started in that. We did it, and we did a few different barbecue contests around the Pacific Northwest. And then I think I got a call, and we did the Oregon State Fair together.
We did the State Fair together years ago. No, that was good. So there any changes you've seen in barbecue? I mean, now you're more of a consumer of barbecue than although. Folks, we do talk on the phone a lot, and he'll say, "You know, I just tried this, or I just tried this." The progression of barbecue, I think, has come from, as you just stated, like in the 80s, where there wasn't much around here. Then you had some Weber's and a few gas grills in the backyard burning chickens. And then now it's a lifestyle and a science almost with these people.
Well, I think what's happened is it's become more available, and it's an excellent taste. And I think the other quality that that makes it something everybody wants to do is everybody can do it at some level. The guy who just got his brand new Weber out in the backyard and he's never cooked before, he can create something. Something can be done there. If I want to bring you in and show you how to do a prime rib in the kitchen, that's a little more difficult. You probably need more training there.
Yeah.
But if you want to throw some hamburgers on the grill or some ribs or whatever, you can turn out something. It may not be the most desirable. So consequently, once you've done it, they say, "Well, let's go over and see what those guys over there in North Portland are doing, the guys in Eastside or whatever." So it's readily something that everybody has an interest in, and they can do with some skill level.
Yeah, no, I think that's true because I know people that couldn't cook were Sour Al stuff, but they, after a few months of tinkering around, they can get something off their grill, and it's a product that's edible. We're going to take a break here in a minute. Don't forget, if you want to email us, that's with one M, you can do it at Barbecue Nation. That's BBQNation@KXL.com. And also recipes@KXL.com. We'll be back in just a moment with more of Ron Mead here on the Barbecue Nation.
It's full-flavored radio, Barbecue Nation with JT on FM News 101.
Welcome back to the Nation. That would be the Barbecue Nation here on KXL and the Radio Northwest Network. I'm JT, along with David Sherliff. David, did you ever see Heart in concert? You never? Never did? I saw him the first time at Oregon State in 1977. Yeah, their folks and their parents met at Oregon State. Little Oregon
really?
State trivia question for you. Yeah. Ann stood up there and talked about that, and then she started singing. And then I got to go backstage, and then I fell in love, but they left town. So there you go. Like to say hi to a couple of our affiliates, KEPNW down in Eugene and KBKR in Baker City. Thanks for having us on your airwaves today. We're talking with Ron Mead, who I must tell you folks, even though he doesn't participate in the restaurant business anymore, competitive cooking. He's an excellent chef, and I've known him for a long time. So you were the first guy that ever showed me how to put a rub together. We were probably drinking Killian's Red or something one afternoon, and we're bored, and you said, hey, look at this. And what's the key to your success with your rubs and stuff?
Well, I think the key of discovering the rub, you know, when anybody first starts, what they do is they grab a rack of ribs, throw them on the grill, cook them off for an hour, hour and a half, whatever, and then they bring them in and throw a bunch of sauce on them and call it barbecue. And I think, well, that was what I was introduced to. And I started taking some barbecue magazines back, late 70s, early 80s, and I picked up this idea of rub. I'd never heard of that before. And so I just started messing around with different types of rubs, different ingredients, and pretty much I'm going to guess I settled on mine about 84, and I think I have used it ever since. And a rub is just a mixture of spices. Generally includes some sugar, some salt, oregano, paprika, probably maybe some chili powder, garlic powder. You've got garlic honey. What's that product?
Powdered honey.
Powdered honey, yeah.
I use that a lot.
Adds a little sweetener. And this really, to me, is when I go to a place and I try their barbecue and it comes out swimming in 2 gallons of barbecue sauce, that really turns me off immediately. That says to me, I don't think these guys know what they're doing. Now, admittedly, I'm prejudiced.
Yeah.
I have my own opinions. But I prefer, if I order barbecue any place, I will say, bring me the meat. And if you're going to put sauce on it, put it on the side. Let me put on what I want to put on. Because I think if you're putting a lot of sauce on, what are you covering up? It says to me you don't have any skill at the actual cooking.
Right.
Because as you know, Jeff, the cooking really is a big aspect of what happens, how long you cook it.
Yes.
You know, you've cooked tri-tips forever, and I've said you're the king of the tri-tips. And you know exactly what the cooking part is. Because tri-tips generally, I don't know how you do them, but don't have a lot of rub on them there.
No.
Basically the meat. So then you've got to show off your skills. But if you don't have a lot of skills, you can dump a bottle of a Bullseye barbecue sauce on there and call it barbecue. So I think anybody that I work with initially, I say, let's work on a rub. There's a million different variations, as you know, and amounts and ingredients. And the only way to learn that is to do it yourself and see what you like and
yes.
go from there.
When I developed my rubs, I actually turned our kitchen. We were still at the ranch, and everybody was gone for about a week. So I turned the kitchen into a test lab.
Yeah.
And I went to Oregon Spice, and I got all these different samples because you turned me on to Oregon Spice years ago. And I started mixing this stuff up. And then finally, I came up with 3 or 4 that I liked, variations of basically the same one. And then I would test them, and I would give the product to eat to somebody. And if I got good reviews, then, okay, that one made the final cut. And it took a little while to do that. But that's how I ended up coming up with the stuff that I use that way. And mine's a little different than other people. I don't use too much paprika in mine. That's just a personal preference. But, you know, they all work.
Sure. Sure.
I really think they do. And for you, when you're doing it, now, do you get the meat at room temperature, give it a rub, let it sit there for a while before you put it in the smoker or on the grill, or what's your process?
Yeah. Well, if you want to talk about ribs is kind of what I focus on. That's what I do the most of now. I've decided I'll get the ribs and I'll take them out and I'll bring them up to close to room temperature, maybe an hour. Then I'll put my rub on and I'll let them sit for maybe an hour, hour and a half. And then what I now do is I put them in my smoker and I'll smoke them for maybe a couple hours, maybe, you know, depending upon the size.
Sure.
You know, you kind of have to watch that. And I smoke them right around 2 to 2 1/4, somewhere in that area. Then I'll pull them off and I'll get a grill. I just have a little barbecue grill out in the back at my house there, and I'll get just as hot as I can, and I throw them on there because I like that little charred texture on them. And I'll grill them on both sides for maybe 3, 4, 5 minutes, and then at the last, I do have a barbecue sauce that I make of my own. I don't think it's any better or worse than anybody else's. I just like to make it. So
start with brown and go forward.
Yeah, right, exactly. And I'll slap a little of that on there, maybe 2 tablespoons, 3 tablespoons on each side, and then caramelize that a little bit, and then they're done, and we're ready to go. So
yeah, you know, I think sometimes, and no disparaging thoughts or anything towards anybody that's listening or has been on this show, but sometimes I think when you go through learning this stuff, we kind of come back to making the process simpler instead of this really, you know, complex things. You're supposed to be having fun. At least I do.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm cooking this stuff, I take it like you do. I take it more seriously than a lot of people, but I still want to have fun doing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've had folks on the show that are barbecue competitors. That's a different deal.
Yeah.
You know, that's not the deal you're going to put on the table on Sunday afternoon for your friends having a couple of beers and out on the back patio. You know, it's a little different.
Well, I'm always intrigued when I see rub recipes and they'll call for 1/8 teaspoon of this. And
I'm thinking,
there's not much that will be influenced. No, 1/8 teaspoon of cayenne pepper, that's a little different.
That's a lot.
That might influence the, but if you're going to put 1/8 teaspoon of some obscure spice.
Cumin.
I don't know who in the world is going to be able to detect that. So I agree with you. My rub, I think, has about 7 things in it. It's pretty basic. There's nothing, I don't have any bark flown in from Brazil to finish off my rub. I just have a pretty standard rub.
That's good. Hey, we're going to take a break, but first I want to tell you about our friends down at Barclays, down there in South Woodburn. You need to go see them, and I'll tell you why. They've got some great stuff. Spring is here. I told you about the guitars last week, but they've got some great sporting equipment. Fishing season's coming up, and they must have 200 fishing poles there, all in great shape, ready to go on sale just for you. That's Barclays in Woodburn. Yeah, go down and see them. We'll be back with more Barbecue Nation in just a minute.
It's a Northwest Lifestyle Weekend. Now, with Barbecue Nation, here's JT on FM News 101.
Welcome back to the Nation here on the Radio Northwest Network and KXL in beautiful downtown Portland on a great Saturday afternoon. This is your weekly protein injection of radio here. Jeff Tracy along with Ron Mead today, and David Shurtleff is he's standing over there with his beaver hat on, and he stole my beaver headphones. You know, even though we're supposedly a Ducks studio around here, we have our own little beaver contingency we hide out in production room for. Don't forget to email us at barbecuenation@kxl.com or recipes@kxl.com. So, Ron Mead, are you ready to play the world-famous lightning round on the Nation?
Absolutely.
All right. Okay, Ron. What's your preferred heat source when you're smoking or barbecuing? And I don't mean smoking, inhaling. I mean smoking meat.
Well, I've just bought, last year I bought an electric smoker, and I'm slowly converting. It's just amazing. I just use chips in it, and I can control the heat. I'm just, I'm kind of, I abandoned ship when I bought it, but I'm very impressed. I've kept an open mind about it.
Hey, there's some new, there's new products out there that are really working. Do you have a favorite cut of meat?
Well, if I'm going to choose, I'd probably do ribs every time.
Sure. Anything you can or won't grill or smoke besides Jell-O?
Peanut butter.
Peanut butter?
Yeah, peanut butter's been hard. Not mastered peanut butter.
If they made you czar of barbecue for 1 week, what would you decree?
What would I decree?
Yes.
Ooh, gosh, I don't know. Maybe I'd outlaw sauce for a week. Make everybody cook barbecue, do their own grilling and barbecue. Come up with a rub. Come up with a flavoring agent other than 2 pounds of brown sugar and some ketchup.
Yes. Well, you know, like we say, start brown and go from there.
Okay.
It works good. Do you marinate any?
I do with some items, but I'd have to say no, not really. We've done some flank steak in Italian dressing and those type things, but not really.
Any alcohol in it?
No. It never makes it past my opener.
Yeah. If you could cook for one person in the world, who would it be? Who would you choose to go, hi, I'm Ron, I'm here to cook for you?
Well, probably wouldn't be the Dalai Lama. I'm probably not going to get invited to that guest. But
no.
Maybe I'd need somebody, a hardcore meat eater, I guess, because that seems to be, who's that guy up in the right-wing guy that shoots everything in sight?
Ted Nugent?
Ted Nugent.
Yeah.
He'd probably appreciate what I cook.
Oh, sure.
We'd probably have a good time together.
Yeah, you'd be doing with the Nuge. You'd be doing the Tedster. The Tedster and the Ronster out there talking stuff. I'd love to listen to that discussion. Is there one thing you wish you had never eaten?
Tomato aspic.
Yeah, that's...
That's vile. I don't know where my mother came up with that. I'm 50 years later, I still remember the day I had to... Eat sit that. At the table, and I couldn't get up until I finished it. Oh,
my,
that's horrible.
My aunt used to make that.
Oh, my God. I feel sorry
for you. It just looked like coagulated blood.
It does.
It was just awful. I mean, good God. And you're trying to make an 8-year-old eat that stuff? No, not good. What's the biggest problem you think for people cooking outdoors this time of year? Now, we are getting into spring, but really over the wintertime and stuff.
Well, I say in general, I hate to say this, but people don't focus on the cooking. You and I have talked about this before with certain members of our family that start cooking, and the next thing you know, they're watching Days of Our Lives on television. Well, the same thing happens in the backyard. When I finish whatever I'm cooking, I want people to say, this is great. This is the best I've ever had. And you can't do that if you're over there with a Budweiser at the end of the table talking about the last time you were at Santa Anita. That's not going to work.
No,
you got to... You got to focus on what you're doing. So that's probably the biggest mistake I see people made is they don't pay enough attention to what they're doing.
You mean you don't like to walk through the kitchen and see a big pot of pasta boiling over and you go, your noodles are boiling, and they go, oh.
Yeah, no, yeah, no.
No.
We get a lot of trouble here, JT. So let's pass on this question.
I don't think you'll be able to hear this show. I don't know, but maybe. Anyway. do you have a favorite comfort food besides ribs in the wintertime?
Ooh, comfort food. I don't know. I started making lobster mac and cheese about a year ago. You turned me on to those langostinos, and I started using that lobster like mac and cheese, and that's pretty comforting. You can't eat a lot of it because it's pretty darn rich, but that's not too hard to fix. Another thing, something I really love to fix in the winter is jambalaya. I got a recipe from Paul Prudhomme about 25 years ago, and I've stuck with it. I don't alter, don't change one thing in it. It's a little labor intensive. It's ingredient intensive, but boy, is it good when you finish. And it's one of those things you're shoveling it in with your right hand and you're mopping your forehead with your left because you're starting to break out in a little sweat. But I love jambalaya.
Oh, no, it's good stuff. Who would you like to have come cook for you, you and Sharon?
Oh, gosh.
Pick somebody. And not me. I've already done that.
I like the things that Emeril fixes. He's not on television much anymore. I don't know if he has any shows or not, but I remember watching him back 25 years ago. I think the other Guy Fieri, I think, would be fun. I'm not sure how good a cook he is, but he's certainly been successful at what he does, and I think he's an entertainer, and he does know his way around the kitchen, I'm sure. But I think that'd be a fun 2 or 3 hours just to joke with him, and I'm sure when the cameras and the microphones get turned off, the language is probably a little different. Probably be a fun afternoon. Break out a couple beers and let's hit it.
Probably gets right to it.
I bet he does.
Have you ever, and I know the answer to this question, have you ever barbecued or cooked outside in your underwear in the snow?
In the snow, no.
No, just, okay, let's take the snow part out of that question.
Well, we try to be a little subtle here on this show. You got a fancy show, Jeff.
Not at all. I remember looking out the window at the Wilsonville house, seeing you out there with 19 smoked turkeys and a Killian's Red at 4:30 in the morning.
That's right. That's when we had that huge, giant 250 deal smoker. You should tell that story about when you were in Louisville and you called me to. You wanted some ribs?
I was still very heavily engaged in the horse business. And, of course, when you go to any other state, they're always proud of their food, you know. And in Kentucky, it's no different than it is in Arkansas or Texas or wherever. And so my wife and I were staying at a guest house, and this was quite a big deal. Very high, powerful people there, and they were all coming in for a New Year's Eve party. And I said, I've got a guy who can make the best ribs in the world. And they're like, yeah, sure. I said, no, they can. He can. So I called me about a day before, and I said, I need like 60 racks of ribs or whatever. It was some ridiculous amount. I don't remember exactly.
60 pounds, which was two boxes.
Okay.
That's a lot. And these are boxes you buy at the wholesale place. They're huge.
And so Ron cooked them, made some sauce, FedExed them to me. That was a big bill. And they agreed. All these high-powered financial people, horse people and all that, they all agreed that you had made the best ribs because there weren't any left. There just absolutely was not any left. I wasn't there at the end of the party. I had been sent home, but there were no ribs left because I checked the next day.
Well, I remember when you called me and I said something like, you want me to make ribs and send them to Kentucky? You got to be nuts. I mean, that's not what you do. Those guys are experts back there. He said, no, me. Just get over there, buy two boxes. And then when I told you you wanted them FedEx, I said, well, the bill's going to be about $250 just on shipping. He said, don't worry about it. So I'm not sure how much whiskey was involved in that decision, but it all worked out.
A little bit. What's the best day of cooking activities contained for you? I mean, when you can just do something around the kitchen or around the grills or whatever, what really turns your crank, so to speak?
Well, I've gone the easy route now. I don't spend as much time over a grill, but I do like the smoking. This new electric smoker, I've cooked maybe 25 or 30 different things on that. I really do enjoy that because you prep your product, you put it in the smoker. About every 45 minutes, you go out and dump a few more
chips
of some sort into it, and a few hours later it comes out, and it's really, really good. So I like that. I'm a little more relaxed now in my older age, and I'm not as energetic at having 42 different things going at all at one time. But what we do every year is we have a big barbecue at our place, and we'll have maybe 25 people over out in the back, and hopefully it's a nice day because we've got a huge, big old oak tree back there that we can set our tables up and everybody sits around and has some good food and tells more stories.
It's great. I've been there. We're going to take a break here on The Nation, and we're going to be back, wrap up the show with Ron Mead and David right after this.
It's Barbecue Nation with Jeff Tracy.
Hey, welcome back to The Nation. That would be Ann and Nancy's cover of the classic Zeppelin song, Rock and Roll. That's what we're doing in Prod 4 here today. We're rock and rolling. Ron brought some wings but I'll share them with David. But I'm not taking them out to the hoarding masses outside the door here because they won't last us 4 minutes. Trust me. You bring food into this studio, this building, gone. Gone, gone. We've had people that have been on the show have actually brought us samples of stuff. I mean, are very appreciated, but we always get ours before we take them outside the studio. I wanted to tell you really quickly about Bear Mountain Forest Products. If you have a pellet smoker, which I do, one of many, they are fantastic. They're made with all the natural goodness of real wood, no synthetics, no additives or preservatives, kind of like we want in our food now. No excess glues. They're all put together by pressure. Alder's the base wood there, and then you've got, you know, mesquite, cherry, hickory, whatever you want. That's Bear Mountain Forest Products. You can find them at bearmountainforestproducts.com or at a local retailer next near you. So, Ron, is there one thing in barbecue that you've wanted to do that you haven't done yet?
Something I haven't done. I've not perfected brisket. I'll tell you that for sure. I've done about 10 briskets. They're okay, but I think you and I have had the discussion. I'm not sure why anybody do a brisket when they can do a tri-tip. You know, the tri-tip is basically the same texture, and it's a whole lot easier to cook. But briskets are, I haven't perfected the Oh Dark 100 wake-up to get the brisket in the smoker so it's ready at a decent hour when you want to serve it. So
that's because we don't drink as much as we used to. You know, if this was 25 years ago, you know, we'd have just never gone to bed yet. But
God cut me off.
Yeah. And so did your wife. You know, I think that's true. I think if I was going to give advice, and I don't give too much advice to people on the show because I always like my guests to talk about it. But if I was going to give advice to people, I would say take something like a tri-tip, take something like if you can get pieces of sirloin flap or something, there's more, you know, fat in it, more marbled, and they're easier to do. And before you attack a brisket, you use one of those. I recommend for people.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think that's a good tip.
Yeah, it works out a lot better. I just think it's much easier to do that. And like you were saying, you know, you can put something on it, you can create something on it. One of the things that I did years and years ago when I was first starting is Cornish game hens. I would have them cut them in half lengthwise. You know, they're usually frozen, and so they just take them, run them through the bandsaw, but clean it all out, and you can cook the halves of those. When you can start perfecting things like that when you're cooking, then you're kind of, like you said, you're paying attention, you know what's going on. You can start progressing up into the more complicated stuff, mm-hmm. is what I think. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, sometimes the issue that people have is controlling temperature. That's a really big aspect. That if you haven't had some experience, and you experience comes from sight a lot, you can look at food, and you could, you know, you and I are enough down the road, done it many times. We can look at it and tell what needs to be done. But for the new person, that's really hard to do. And it reminds me something. Remember that we did a couple of barbecues out at the ranch, where we did the whole hogs,
right?
And put them on the spit and everything. Well, you've got to be experienced. You can end up with something, but it may not be very good if you had some experience at that.
And you know, I always look at it this way. When I'm talking to people about food and they say stuff like I've got, you know, the best sauce or whatever, I listen to them. I may not agree with them, but I listen to them because I can always pick up something off that. All right, we've got to get out of here for the day. Ron Mead, thank you very much. If you guys want to go to Ron's website, it's ronmead.com. Ron, what I didn't tell you is Ron is a very successful internet marketer. He's a very successful published author also. So you can check out his website at ronmead.com. Thank you, David, for another great week that you've done this, and to all of our affiliates up and down the line, thank you very much. McGarian is on deck, and you can check out my website at thecowboycook.com. Take care, everybody. We'll see you next week. We're going to leave you with a little more rock and roll from Ann and Nancy. Take care.
Bye. Barbecue Nation is produced by Alpha Media USA in association with JTSD Productions, LLC. All rights reserved. Copyright 2016. Barbecue Nation is produced and tolerated by David Shurtleff in production compound 4 high above the skyline of PDX. We'll be back next week with another edition of Barbecue Nation. Remember, a good long smolder is better than a 2-minute flameout. See you next week.